Hello and welcome to the Majlis Radio Free Africa Liberty's current affairs podcast focusing on Central Asia. I'm Mohammed Tahir, the host of the Majlis podcast and Radio Free Africa Liberty's media manager here in Washington, D.C. Kyrgyzstan is again discussing constitutional changes, and the proposed changes have already created strong reactions among people and particularly among the members of civil society. I guess there must be people who are supporting it, but those who are against the draft took social media to call it anecdotally a Khanistitution, referring to Khan and the constitution, and some people are already planning a protest rally this weekend. If the draft is approved, it will significantly elevate the president's influence on the entire system. And the changes are also proposed on the composition of the parliament and establishing people's kurultai. And there are articles about media, civil society, and political activities. And the timing of these proposed changes is crucial, given the country is literally ruled by one man who was freed from jail during the coup a couple of weeks ago. And now he is the interim president as well as the acting Prime Minister. So there is a lot to talk about. To discuss all these, I'm joined by Dr. Sania Toktogazeva, the constitutional law expert based in Bishkek, Nuriana Kurtenbaeva, the deputy director of Soros Foundation Kyrgyzstan, and Bruce Panier, the editor of Radio Free Radio Liberty Central Asia blog, Kishlok Owazi. Thank you very much, colleagues, for joining us on this important conversation. And particular appreciation goes to you, Dr. Sania. You become our to-go expert in recent days as Kyrgyzstan is going through a very dramatic changes. Thank you very much for that.
Thank you.
Thank you. So about today's show, there were three aspects that draw my attention, which are proposed changes to the scope of the president's authority, the issue of the People's Council, also called Kurultai, and discussion about freedoms, media, and civil liberties. Yet there was also talk about parliament, which is locally called Jokor Kugingesh. I'm sure we are going to use these local terms during the discussion, so let me clarify that at the beginning. So I guess I will start the conversation by taking your first impressions about the draft and then dive into each of those points and try to make sense of what all these really mean for Kyrgyzstan. So let's start with you, Sania. So your initial thoughts about the proposed change. Please be brief. We will get into details a bit later. First, I'm kind of interested in taking everyone's initial views. So, Sania.
Thank you. So I think before even getting into the details, it is very important now to highlight that proposed constitutional reforms from procedural constitutional law rules are absolutely illegal, unconstitutional, and illegitimate. Why? Because according to the constitution, initiators or who has the right to amend the constitution only belongs to the parliament. Right. However, current sitting sixth convocation of the parliament do not have right to start the constitutional reforms. And luckily, we got the similar interpretation from the Venice Commission opinion, where they have clearly indicated that during this period, when their official term has ended, they only have diminished powers. And they cannot use these powers for extraordinary measures such as constitutional reform. Mm. So they have essentially confirmed all the words that the lawyers have been repeating all these days. So which means whatever it is happening now with their fake constitutional assembly that they have established today and etc. is completely illegal. And international experts, Venice Commission is also have confirmed it. And my first impressions about the text of the Constitution
before going to that, can I get your response on something else that you just raised? I mean, how the initiators of this draft are reacting to the points that you are raising, that it might be totally illegal what they are doing?
So the problem here is that what we see, that number of deputies, I think already five or six of them among these 80 who have initiated this law, said that they are recalling their signatures back. So which means we don't even have the required 80 numbers of the deputies. So which means it is completely under the huge question mark. And I think one of the MPs, Dastan Bekeshev, is raising the question and have basically requested requested the prosecutor's office to deal with this, to what extent there has been the violations from the side of the speaker. And I think one of the main authers who claimed that he was not the author, who he works in the basically apparatus of the president. So which means what we can see is that every single step that the current government is doing is illegal. And each time when the lawyers are reacting to that, they're trying to counter-react. We have been saying everything was behind closed doors, and today they have created constitutional assembly post factum, right? And this is as well illegal, because the only way how we can conduct constitutional reforms is to have the newly elected parliament coming, the seventh convocation, and then they can start the constitutional reform. This is what the current constitution actually requires.
Mm-hmm. Okay, so about your first reaction as to the draft of the proposed changes.
Yeah, so the text is very raw, and there's so many contradictions among the text. And the first thing that I have clearly would like to indicate is that the system of checks and balances, or literally there is no balance of power any longer, the powers of the president is substantially increasing. Second thing, they're creating a great opportunity for the president to control the parliament by what we call quasi-constitutional body as Kurultai, or the People's Assembly. And then there are a lot of worrisome signs of bringing these moral norms and integrating it into the constitution, morality and something protecting the traditions or certain values or something like this, and which is really, really dangerous, taking into consideration that what kind of judges we have, the interpretation, and it is always dangerous that we cannot basically integrate the moral norms into the legal document, right? Mm. And another worrisome sign is that a lot of important things that we had in the current 2010 constitution have been taken out. For instance, there is no mentioning about the explicit prohibition of forced labor, let's say. They have taken out this explicit prohibition of inhumane degrading treatment, something like this. Another thing, censorship, potential censorship, right, is being introduced by Article 23, which is this huge threat for the freedom of expression. So I think the more we read, the more potential problems we can find out. Mm. But these are the most, right, top highlights, yeah. That I could mention.
Yeah, we are going to get into the details of what you have just said. I'm kind of particularly interested in your comments about the checks and balances. That's very interesting. So, Nuriana, you are sort of representing the civil society in Kyrgyzstan. So tell us what you think from your perspective, from the civil society perspective, about the proposed changes.
Yeah, I think we're all quite living in a tumultuous times as of 5th of October, and I think it would be correctly said if we say that Kyrgyzstan is now experiencing a deep political and legal crisis. And in a way, we're at the tipping point or at the crossroads. And I think it is very important what we're discussing today. And the coming days, weeks, and months are going to be really defining in terms of Kyrgyzstan's democratic development for the future. I think that the decisions which are being discussed and adopted, they'll have tremendous effect on our country's development. And in that sense, I think, I mean, I'll try to give kind of a more broader perspective, not getting into details of what is being discussed.
I think, Nuriana, we are going to get into the that part of the discussion a little bit later. But now, is there anything that you can share with us, your feelings about some articles that propose changes on concrete terms, which from your point of view is questionable?
I think what is the most principal issue here, and I think on which Sania touched upon, is whether right now the people of Kyrgyzstan are going to accept kind of the moment of political exigency and will give up under the pressure of certain political forces and will agree to this proposed constitution, or we are going to stay firm on the path of legality. Mm. And I think it's a fight over, legal legitimacy and the political exigency. And I think it is the heartfelt feeling of people of Kyrgyzstan that we can no longer live by the terms of political exigency. We want rule of law, we want legality, and whatever changes are proposed, they need to be within the terms of the rule of law, within the terms of the rules which are set up for changing of the constitution. And I think it's the main kind of slogan which I think people are discussing today, and all these days when we have seen the proposed constitutional changes, is that whatever we decide, and if we decide to change, it has to be within the framework of the law, and
So,
there shouldn't be breach of procedures, there shouldn't be breach of laws, procedural
what about the
breaches.
document itself, the content of the document? Is there
I mean, of
any
course,
question,
the
any
content
problematic?
itself. I mean, basically, in short, the document itself, it's just gonna throw in a basket bin all the democratic achievements that Kyrgyzstan has acquired to date. All this fight of the civil society activists, of active citizens in terms of reaching, political pluralism, freedom of speech, the change, the culture of political change in a country. This is all going to be forgotten and just thrown off. I mean, we have to accept that Kyrgyzstan is still unique in a way that we have had political changes, change of regime. We have had some political pluralism, political kind of dynamics in the country. And we have experienced certain freedoms, and we have active civil society and activists. We experienced this freedom, which makes us unique. And it would be a big pity to really kind of just to forget all these achievements. It would be just too of a big loss.
Yeah, very interesting. We are going to unpack what you have just said. Before that, Bruce, so what's your thought? What strikes out in the document from your perspective? I mean, we were talking about some of the aspects that Nuriana has already mentioned about the media. What's the highlights from your perspective?
As has been pointed out, and here and already in the conversation, and certainly in a number of articles this week, this puts all the power of the country into the hands of the president. It's I mean, they've had amendments to the Constitution when Akayev was in and Bakiyev was in that gave more power to the executive branch, to the president, but not like this. I mean, this isn't even. Sometimes you say, well, this is a step back, but this is like much further than that. This is like going even beyond where the starting line was. I mean, way, way back. It just essentially sets up an authoritarian government. The president appoints the prime minister, and not that it matters because the parliament really doesn't have much power. The president appoints all the ministers, the governors, he has say in the judges. I mean, the list just goes on and on. Any significant official, he has power over them. And so it's basically one man's rule. And like I said, even in the worst times in Kyrgyzstan, it was much better than that. So this is, like I said, it's not even a question of going backward. This would put the country in a place where it's never even been since independence.
Wow, that's interesting. I read some of those comments in various social media posts, but I couldn't believe in that. So the draft law clearly stipulates that he's the one hires and fires prime minister, ministers, chiefs of the departments.
At least that was what I read. Was that he would be able to appoint the prime minister and all the prime minister's deputies, all the ministers, the governors. I think it did say the judges, so like I said, any significant political figure, he could appoint them, and which of course also gives him the right to dismiss them. And that's where, the curl tie comes in, is that this seems to be this body that would be recommending potential dismissals or something, to the president. So it's a total joke. I mean, I've seen it compared to to Turkmenistan's Halk Maslahat, and that's really what it looks like. So like I said, this is dark stuff, I mean, it really, it's always been like the island of democracy, but this constitution, if it passes, pretty much put them on a level with Turkmenistan or Tajikistan, at least in writing.
Yeah, I guess this comes from the chapter one of the draft. I guess it says the president is the head of the state and of the executive branch of Kyrgyz Republic. He determines the main direction of the domestic and foreign policy of the state. Some also interpreted this as if the president will have the full power to do anything everything in the country. And there's a section about the presidential term being 5 years and no more than 2 terms. I guess this article is kind of widely practiced, isn't it, when you look into all the other forms of the presidential governments? Sonia?
I would just comment real quickly that right now the current constitution gives a maximum one six-year term in office, which is what Almazbek Atambayev served. One term, 6 years, that's it. This new constitution all of a sudden goes back to 2 terms, 5 years, except that presidential elections and the referendum are being held on the same day. So strangely, if it's, say, Sadir Japarov, which it looks to be like certainly the favorite to win the presidential election, he'd be elected under the previous constitution, which would give him a 6-year term. Although as soon as he assumes power and if the referendum passes and this constitution is still the way it's written, is still the constitution that's being voted for, if it passes, then he can run for another 5-year term. So actually he would serve a 6-year term first, and then he could run for another 5-year term. But we've seen, even in Kyrgyzstan, them write that out or get around it. You strike the 2-term limit, or you amend the constitution significantly so that, like Akayev's case, after he was into his second term, they amended the constitution so much that they said that the previous 2 elections didn't count and he was free to run again for another 2 elections. And Rahmon in Tajikistan was the same way.
Mm. Yeah, here comes the topic earlier Sonia was raising about the checks and balances. So, Sonia, please jump in here. And also, Bruce raised some interesting issues, which really falls into your background, the extension of president's influence or his involvement in terms of the election or the selection of judges. What kind of deal is that?
So essentially, this proposed draft literally is eliminating the effective system of checks and balances that we have under current constitution. President almost has an unlimited power with no commensurate responsibility given to this power. It is very strange that the constitution says that the president is also head of the executive, but at the same time, it does not clearly say the prime minister, but it is assumed that according to the draft, there will be also the head of the executive. So which means this person will always be used, someone to blame for, right, if something happened. So there is no personal responsibility mentioned about the personal responsibility of the president, because in current constitution, we have clear statement which says that the prime minister bears the personal responsibility for the government. Another thing is they are rehabilitating all the terrible powers that Akayev and Bakiyev always used literally have exploited previously. For instance, the right to call for a referendum. Akayev have abused this power 4 times, right? And he literally redrafted the constitution 4 times to extend his presidential powers. Bakiyev also have done it in 2007. So intentionally, this power has been taken away from president in 2010, knowing that our former presidents literally love doing that a lot. Now they're rehabilitating this back. Second thing that both former presidents loved doing was the legitimating their illegal works through constitutional court. This is what Akayev did several times and Bakiyev did. I think the darkest time was in 2007 when constitutional court, with their single opinion and decision, have annulled the 2006 constitution and rehabilitated the 1993 constitution back. And then they made the referendum, and then we had the 2007 constitution. So they're bringing back the constitutional court back with substantially increased powers. And on top of that, according to the text, they are giving the right to the constitutional court to review the impeachment procedure for the president. This is also very worrisome. Another thing is that literally the president now has the full control over the judges of the constitutional court. And on top of that, he can even appoint the chief justice of both Supreme Court and constitutional court. So which means the proposed draft is literally eliminating the judicial independence. The judges now would be fully dependent on the president. And I think another problem is that the constitution does not mention how the parliament is going to be elected. It just says that the parliament will have 90 members, but it does not clarify whether the election will be according to the proportionate system or majoritarian system. Mm. It just says that it will be defined by law. And there are many, many things where they have left it for the regulation by the law, which is also very dangerous because we still don't know whether we're going to vote for our deputies according to political parties or are they going bringing back the single mandate or district majoritarian form. And as you can see, and on top of the judicial system, now the president has the full control over the security, defense, and all this huge security block, which means literally it's an unlimited powers of the president with almost no personal responsibility. And I agree with Bruce that this is really, really dark. And so far, I think the worst constitution that we had was 2007 constitution, when it was the combination of the worst things of Akayev's time and plus the Bakiyev's time. But this text does not even stand close to the 2007 constitution. If they succeed with the referendum, it is going to be the right way for the establishment of the authoritarian regime with unlimited powers of the president.
Very interesting. I know we have questions about Kurultai, the composition of the parliament and freedoms. I will get to it in a moment. Just one more thought about the suggested reform on the office of the president, Nuriana. So I guess it might be a little bit controversial what I'm going to ask. So basically what we are talking about is the draft constitution envisions to change the form of the government to the presidential system, keeping the office of the president at the center of the universe in Kyrgyzstan. I guess we see similar examples from the neighborhood, isn't it? I mean, is Kazakhstan or Uzbekistan's constitution any different from what these suggested changes proposes?
Yeah, I mean, just listening to colleagues presenting, it really makes me think, you know, whether we even should discuss in very details the proposed changes, because, I mean, altogether it's very illegal, and I hope it's not decisive yet, and we're not going to live by this proposed constitution. I think what is important right now, and where, you know, the focus in our discussions should be in the discussions in Kyrgyzstan, is about if we make changes to the constitutions, how we make it correctly, by following the rules of procedure, by doing it legally. Yeah. And in that sense, I think
that's an ideal world.
Maybe not.
Yeah, what I'm saying is that's an ideal world. If that happens, yeah, that's great. Now we have to deal what we have to deal with. I mean, at the moment, they are proposing these changes, and let's see how it goes. But looking into this document, for example, how it is different or how it is compared with the system that's already exist in neighboring countries, some of the neighboring countries, like, let's say, Kazakhstan, Uzbekistan.
Yeah, I mean the referendum is not yet set fully. I mean, there are still questions in terms of legality of its announcements. So we may still have the situation where the referendum doesn't take place, and still there is a room for constitutional chamber to consider the appeals of the political parties, which are, you know, questioning the entire decision to postpone the parliamentary elections, and which can give the way, you know, not to make the referendum happen on this proposed terms. And in terms of comparing with the neighboring countries, I don't know if it is correct to compare. I mean, yes, we live in one geography, but you know, the political context and the political culture within our countries are so completely different, and we've been living in a different type of governance system for 10 years. And in that sense, we do have our own experiences where we can compare, you know, the advantages and disadvantages of different systems of governance, which are being proposed and discussed currently in our country. And for that, in that sense, I think what would have been the best possible scenario is really updating the current constitutions while bringing it to the really fully functioning system of checks and balances, where, you know, we did have problems with the judicial independence. I mean, in the current constitutions, it's not fully independent. Still, there is a lot of influence on the president of the the presidential apparatus on the formation of the judiciary branch in Kyrgyzstan. And also the problematic issue is with the control of the security sector of the office of the general prosecutor and defense. So, but with changing those certain things, I think we could probably upgrade the system to a more workable parliamentary form of governance, which has proven, in my view, its efficiency in Kyrgyzstan by ensuring certain political pluralism, certain political freedoms, and a different type of civil society which exists in Kyrgyzstan. So I don't know. I think we should compare with ourselves.
Sure. Yeah, definitely. It was just a kind of fun exercise that I was trying to. I mean, Bruce might have some thoughts on that. Bruce, you are kind of talking about the dark times, referring to this. And when you look into the neighbors, I mean, where this idea is coming from? I mean, is there any similarity? Is there any comparison within the neighborhood that this idea might be coming from?
Obviously, it would make Kyrgyzstan's system look a lot more like the neighbors. That's for sure. It's been a long time since I read the Kazakh, Uzbek, or any of the constitutions from Central Asia, although I have read them before. If memory serves correctly, it's at least written in their constitutions, like in Kazakhstan and Uzbekistan, you know, that the parliament and the judiciary are different branches of government. At least on paper, they have all these rights that are supposed to keep them separate from the president. You know, in fact, we know that that's not the way it works, but at least it's written that way. Whereas this draft amendments to Kyrgyzstan's constitution doesn't even have that facade.
Oh,
it states right, you know, outright and continually, you know, that the president is in charge of this and then that has to do with the judiciary or the parliament or something, you know, so it doesn't even have the pretense of trying to claim being, you know, a three branches of government. So that's, it's bad, but that's the only difference I can think of.
This cannot even compare to the constitutions of the neighboring countries you are talking about, really, you know, dark times. So there was also comments on social media saying that the law was, the changes was clearly proposed by someone who is sure that that person will be the next president. So I don't know, there are so many speculations about the proposed changes. Now about the suggestions of establishing Kurultai. Anyone who follows Turkmenistan will know how crazy this idea is. So what is in this suggestion? And also, why are people fired up about the proposed changes on the question of civil liberties and media? Let's continue the Majlis podcast talking about these and many other questions very shortly. First, let me recap the debate that today on the Majlis podcast, I'm joined by Dr. Saniye Toktogazeeva, the constitutional law expert based in Bishkek, Nuriana Kartanbayeva, the deputy director of Soros Foundation Kyrgyzstan, and Bruce Panier, the editor of Ready for Your Freedom Liberties Central Asia blog, Kishlak Owazi. I'm Mohammed Tahir, Ready for Your Freedom Liberties media manager and the host of the Majlis podcast here in Washington, D.C., and we are discussing the proposed constitutional changes in Kyrgyzstan. So, about the Kurultai. Let me start with you again, Saniye. How the draft imagines the composition and the responsibilities of this body?
So in the proposed draft, it says that it is going to be consultative body, which would have a recommendatory character. The key thing that the president will be calling them, and the president and both the parliament can report to them, and they can recommend on important governmental policies and etc. We all know from the previous examples of maybe Turkmenistan is too radical. Let's take Kazakhstan. Like, what did Nazarbayev do, like, in early independence with People's Assembly, Assembly Narod of Kazakhstan, right?
So
the Kazakhs. So what Nazarbayev did in the first early period of independence, he had this huge, basically, battle with the parliament, because the first parliament was pretty good, actually, just like the Kyrgyz parliament. And essentially, he literally dissolved the parliament and then created this People's Assembly, who drafted the constitution and etc. So, which means he used this assembly in order to get rid of the parliament. So, and this is the standard tool, such kind of kurultais in the hands of the president in the context of Central Asia. It becomes the tool to destroy the democratic institutions, deliberative institutions as parliament. And I'm pretty sure this is what it is going to happen, because we don't know what kind of deputies will come. If the composition of the deputy would be that there would be very like strong opposition leaders, literally the Kurultai will be used as a tool to kind of tame the parliament. Yeah. If the parliament would be composed with more or less like moderate people who would support, then of course it will be like a more consultative body, because there would be no one to tame for, right? So we always need to analyze whatever legal proposals are made in the general socio-political context.
You know, as the former director of RFRL's Turkmen Service, I know how these ambiguous institutions like Kurultais are used, yeah, as a rubber stamp body to empower the president, because Turkmenistan keeps playing with this idea. So who will be the members of this institution, and how will they be elected? Is there any elaboration in this draft document about the election process of the deputies to this body?
It says that there will be the delegates from local self-governments, but there is strict rules like how they will be elected. So they're pretty much, I'm pretty sure it would be certain people who the president would be willing to see in the Kurultai, because this is always what we had, right? We had Kurultais, and Kurultai is even mentioned in the current text of the constitution, but just the body which the people can form. But now what they're literally doing, they're integrating it and making it the quasi-constitutional body who can have an oversight over the parliament. And this is what it is dangerous about.
Interesting. Yeah, I think in Turkmenistan too, the members are proposed by the local authorities, and local authorities reports to whom at the end? To the president, right? So I guess the body is called the Supreme Advisory Council, and they could apparently propose changes to the president. So it just reminds me of what we have been seeing in Turkmenistan. I don't know whether there is any elaboration in this draft document. I mean, where this body falls on in terms of the legislative authority versus to the parliament. I mean, is there any contradiction? Is there any clashes expected? What's your thought on that?
In terms of legislation, it just says that they can like recommend on certain policy issues. This is also worrisome. I mean, like any crazy ideas that if, let's say, a president or someone else would have, they can initiate it by Kurultai, right? Mm. And since now Kurultai can actually recommend on certain policy issues and direct both the parliament and the president, claiming that this is what people want, it can be used as a kind of a legitimating power forcing the parliament, let's say, to enact one law or the other. Mm. This is how I see it.
Mm. Bruce, how do you see it? I mean, also, you know, speaking of the parliament, there are also suggestions about its composition in the draft. I mean, how the Kyrgyz Kurultai will compare to what we have in Turkmenistan, and also the role of the parliament going forward.
So I think Sania went over it pretty well, but, you know, by bringing in Kazakhstan's People's Assembly and, and the Turkmen example is here's a body that's, you know, got, well, quasi-status, I suppose, is the best way to put it. It's a tool that presidents can use when they're unhappy with the parliament or for some reason they see some advantage in using this body as opposed to parliament to get support for their decisions. You know, we've seen how it's been used in Turkmenistan, right? Oh, yeah. You know, it was already created, but with the first, all of a sudden, when there was the assassination attempt on Niyazov, you know, in late 2002, then all of a sudden the Halk Maslahati got raised in status because at least as we heard, it was impossible to confirm some of the members of the parliament were possibly involved in the assassination attempt or at least plotting it, right? So all of a sudden Niyazov moves it over and puts the authority, more authority, into the Halk Maslahati. And Berdi Bukhametov has raised it up to it has a status, currently a status that's above parliament right now. You know, in Kazakhstan, you can see it working the same thing. Again, as Sonia pointed out, Nazarbayev did have a troublesome parliament and he dissolved it. And even when they reformed the parliament, it still had legitimate, genuine opposition figures in it. So by having this other body outside of parliament, which had some kind of status awarded to it, you can counter any possible threat, potential threat from within the parliament by just all of a sudden referring to this other body, which is always packed with loyalists, and giving it, either raising its status or at least giving it more prominence than you would give to parliament. So it's, you know, it's a tool for the president to use.
In Turkmenistan, as examples, the body, you know, gets together once in a year, I guess. So all are just staunch loyal to the system, to the government, to the president, and they are, you know, they are there to raise hands. That's all they do. I guess on the freedoms, though, let me bring in Nuriana, this is your field, about the freedoms, human rights, and political parties. These are some of the hotly debated topics on social media, I realize. So with regards to this draft, what's cooking up? I mean, what they are talking about in this draft?
I think essentially what this civil society is standing for is the rule of law and the working system of checks and balances. Because in the absence of checks and balances, it is you can also forget about human rights and the implementation and realization of human rights. Because in the absence of checks and balances, you have unlimited power, which, I mean, by its nature, the state will abuse that power if there are no ways to protect that right and to guarantee that right. In that sense, the societal demand of Kyrgyz citizens is for greater accountability of the authorities in performing their rights. You know, the when people went for these meetings after the parliamentary elections on 5th of October, I mean, one of the major slogans was the fight against corruption, you know, the inability to perform basic rights to good health care, good education, economic opportunities. Right. And all these rights in the constitutions, it's not possible in the absence of the rule of law, where, you know, there is no accountability of the state, of the state service. And the current demand is really for effective governance, you know, for effective solutions, for innovation in how the services are produced. They should be citizen-centric. Right. And what we see in the proposed constitutions is basically censorship. It's, you know, what has been mentioned, that the will be guided by the moral postulates rather than by the law. And all of this, it just denigrates the whole culture.
Nuriana, can you unpack this? I mean, this article about where they speak about the moral, preserving cultural values, I guess one of the words mentioned. What are they? I mean, what specifically they are talking about and how you interpret that?
I mean, you know, as a lawyer, you know, the colleagues mentioned, it's impossible to translate into legal terms the moral postulates or moral norms. How do you define what is a spiritual thing? You know, how would you define what is that it belongs to Kyrgyz spirituality or the traditional norms, etc.? It's impossible to make it in legal terms. And in that sense, it really leaves it undefined what is right and what is wrong, what is legal or what is not. And then it opens up a room, you know, for misinterpret those things, to put censorship over people whom you don't like, or, you know, for who don't share your views. I mean, it's basically direct road, you know, to human rights violation and discrimination is based on whatever, you know, the ruling elite would like. You know, if I don't like you because of different ethnicity or different religion, or you, if I don't like the way you think, you know, then I'll have the possibility to limit your rights. And this is the path to nowhere.
Bruce, we were talking about this earlier. I mean, these discussions about this moral preserving culture sort of discussion, in what context these things are placed there in the draft law, and also how it relates to freedom of press and expression?
As we just heard, too, the problem with this is that you can't define this at all. I mean, this is so open to interpretation that you could say anything is offensive, harmful to the moral character, the traditions, the sensitivities, whatever you want to say of the society. Now, the really simple example that I'm sure someone's going to bring up is they had the problem with the Kalpak, right? Mm. They thought, you know, that someone did a modeling shoot and they had a Kalpak on a dog, and people thought that was an insult to Kyrgyz Kyrgyz, culture and the Kyrgyz people and stuff. They also had the incident with chuchuk, the horse sausage a few years ago too. Those are very, very simple and not innocent, but I mean, they're not very harmful or anything like that. But you can see that this is where they lay the groundwork for this stuff, right? And that sounds good to everybody. You know, people say, well, do you want to see the national hat on a dog at a modeling fashion show or something? It's easy to say, no, that's offensive. And I can understand that. That's no problem. But the point is, what is offensive to one person is not offensive to another person. And so, like I said, this is where the interpretation comes in. What will people do in the future who might be from a minority group somehow that someone will pick up on and say, well, this is offensive to our national culture. And of course, there is no referee or umpire that can tell you what is and what is not offensive. It's whatever the court systems, which, of course, the president will pack with his own people, consider to be offensive and are willing to rule on. And it's a real slippery slope, about what you consider to be so offensive to the culture, the national morals, mm-hmm. that you figure that you have to ban it, imprison people for it, fine people for it, whatever. So it's a bad area to go into from the very beginning.
Yeah, very interesting. And I guess we need to wrap up the discussion. I know we are skipping too many important details here. Hopefully, we will have the chance to continue this discussion in some form in the future. But Sania, just one of the final points that I had in mind is, aside from the legality, which you said it could be potentially illegal what they are doing now at this moment, it's been just a few weeks since the government is in the office. I'm just wondering, what time did they come up with this, all these ideas? Who's behind this in the bigger picture?
So the very first moment when Sadr Japarov was released from prison, even before his conviction has been annulled, right, over the night, he came before the people in Alato Square, and the first thing that he said was following, that we will change the constitution and will bring back the presidential form. That was the moment when personally me was really scared that most likely this is what is going to happen. And from that moment on, we see that they literally hijacked, right, our government. He became prime minister, acting president, and he put his all loyal people into the most important positions. So literally that was the idea. And another thing is that the rumor has it probably Russian Federation can be behind it. And perhaps this Sadr Japarov himself is not understanding that he is among the puppets, that he can be used and then replaced by someone else. But this is one of the conspiracy theories. But to a certain extent, I agree with that, because I think this is within the best interest of the Russian Federation that we would bring back the presidential form. This way it would be even much more easier to control us. And I'm pretty sure that with that respect, the Russia would be in support of this constitutional reform. And unfortunately, I think these dirty rules will come in, like everyone who's against it are from the West, all these Western values. That's why this current constitution is so fully backed with all these ideas of moral values, traditions of Kyrgyz people, and etc. All this potential possibility of censorship or the ban on media work, on that threatens these moral values and traditions. So with this way, I think the methodology that the current government or whoever is using is literally to divide the people, and play with the emotions, exploit the emotions. And this is the most dangerous thing, because the society in Kyrgyzstan is getting more and more polarized.
Just a final thoughts here, Bruce. It doesn't look like it's a thought-through document. I mean, earlier Sania was raising questions about the legality, and also it looks like it's just rushed into something. So from your perspective, what's the big picture idea behind it?
Well, obviously they're trying to get whoever's running the show is trying to get control over the situation as fast as possible. I think that's one of the problems that with the outside, not so much inside Kyrgyzstan, but the reaction outside Kyrgyzstan, and particularly from some of the Western countries and stuff, is that you get the idea this is all rushed through, and that no matter what they do in January, even if they pass this referendum, it will be undone after protests in the future, and they'll redo the constitution or something. But that's the wrong way to kind of look at this. I see the people that are in power now want to get this through as fast as possible so they get the maximum control they can right away, because even they know that the Kyrgyz people aren't going going to put up with this? We already see that there's a lot of people are unhappy with this draft constitution. There's a march in Bishkek on Sunday against it. That's only going to get more and more. You know, so if they don't get this thing through quickly, but if they can't get it through before spring, say, or something, then they just probably won't get it through, because I think public outrage would be so significant by that point, there'd be no way to do it. That said, they might not even wait until January. You know, I'd be surprised if they don't have to make some concessions in the wording of this document before they put it up to referendum, because it seems to be becoming increasingly unpopular with people as they become more and more familiar with it.
Interesting. Noriana, let's end the conversation with you. I mean, earlier you were talking about the opposition to it, and of course, legally, it's kind of on a shaky ground already. So what's the chances of this document being adopted, and what are the areas you will be watching leading up to the actual referendum about this?
I mean, in any case, it is important whether this referendum takes place or not, that there is as much information as possible to people, to ordinary people, and they know what the document they have in front of them and how they want to live in the future. I mean, it's been a lot of fake information around, there's been a lot of lies and manipulation, and in that sense, I think this is the real fight, is the one which is happening in the informational field. And from that sense, I think people of Kyrgyzstan do have experiences of many different governments, many different presidents, and they're probably going to make the wise decision on their own part. But what is important, I think, is to, as colleague said, is to follow the rule of law, to follow the objective rules of legality. I mean, the constitutions are not set in stone, but it is important that we enshrine this culture of legality. And only when we have this culture of legality, which is, I think, nascent, I see that a lot more people talking about legality, it's only then that the democratic institutions will start working in Kyrgyzstan. Because what we're seeing right now is a test to the democratic institutions in Kyrgyzstan. And we're still kind of in the process. I do have a glimpse of hope that, you know, we will pass this test and we will enter into the legal field where, you know, we'll make the necessary changes as needed. I mean, it's not something like completely new, you know, just in Kyrgyzstan. I think the entire world is going in a way through the test of its democratic institutions. We're going through global changes, and it is even more important to pass this test of legality, of democracy, because we have a lot more challenges ahead of us, such as, you know, economic crisis, ecological crisis, and many other things.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, maybe I know we are just very much out of time, but in few words, if Bruce and Sanya, if you guys would like to say anything, you know, discussion is hot these days. I mean, every aspect of this this thing is debated. Lots of criticism, and people are coming to the streets to protest. I mean, this weekend, one of them is happening. So, as we are headed to the referendum, I mean, is there anything particular that you guys will be watching at? I mean, where this discussion will go?
Well, I want to hear what somebody has to say, so I'll just put in very quickly a comment. I'm not sure that they'll get to the referendum. You know, there's a big question in my mind if, like I said, public unrest and resistance to this could get to be very quickly get to be so large that they have to scrap this. And so I'd say it's 50-50, you know, that they go through with this referendum, at least with the draft constitution text that they have right now.
And earlier, Sanya was talking about some existing legal challenges. But Sanya, so where your eyes will be?
I will be like closely watching on what Constitutional Chamber is going to say, because currently the political party reform applied to Constitutional Chamber challenging the constitutionality of the law that has been passed by Parliament on October 22nd, where they have artificially prolonged their term and stopped the election process. because the request for the Venice Commission was sent by the Constitutional Chamber about this particular case. And Venice Commission opinion was that the current parliament cannot do that. It was illegal. They cannot artificially prolong their term. They cannot stop the election process. And moreover, they cannot do the constitutional reform. So now I think there's going a secret bargain between the judges of the Constitutional Chamber and most likely Sadr Japarov. I'm pretty sure that Sadr Japarov is maybe promising them the privileges because the new constitutional court is having a very substantial amount of power. And interestingly, all the judges will be appointed until the 70 years, you know, so this is a huge privilege for them. So that's why now I think the judges would be more like prone to find this law constitutional unless they will feel this huge pressure, public pressure, and the public calling so that they would do their historical mission rightly, so that they would not repeat the mistakes of previous constitutional court. So this is where I would be watching closely, because if they say that it is constitutional, then it would be no other way to kind of stop this reform, because they would legitimate this process and give a green light.
Interesting. Yeah. Wow. I know there is a lot we are missing in this discussion, but let's stop it here. I promise we will get back to it in some form very soon. So with this, thank you very much, Dr. Sania Tokhtagazibeh, the constitutional law expert based in Bishkek, Nuriana Kartanbayeva, the deputy director of Soros Foundation Kyrgyzstan, and Bruce Panier, the editor of Radio Free Europe, Radio Liberty, Central Asia Bloc, Kishlok Awazi. Again, thank you very much for your time and thoughts today.
Thank you.
This is it from me, Mohammed Tahir, Radio Free Europe, Radio Liberty's media manager and host of the Majlis podcast here in Washington, D.C. Until next week, bye-bye.